Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm anti all people from all countries entering our marriage sexually.
I was thinking about what would be terrible about a threesome.
Does it feel the same if I was suggesting a lady versus a gentleman?
I think it applies across the board. And I think what would be really terrible is I would inevitably finish first.
It would be so exciting to have another person around.
No, just more that's an issue I have.
No, it isn't.
I think it is a bit.
I don't think it is.
So that interregnum, if you were the one who finished first, what are you doing while the others reach completion? You can't look at your phone.
No, you can't look at your phone. And then probably it'd be that thing where, like, because you were finished, you just get, like, the situation dawns on you in a certain
The second
kind of
it's over.
It's over. Yeah. But it can't just be over because you're there.
Yes.
So I think you would...
Encourage?
Mm-hmm. I think you would, like, make performative sounds.
Oh, God.
Not like, ooh, yeah, but, like... The classic, I think you'd be thinking, do no harm. Like, you know, the doctor's credo is like, first, do no harm. I think you'd be like, first, do no harm. Like, so
you're trying to be neutral. You're trying to be a neutral
I think
presence.
That actually, truly what you would do is you'd be like, let me just be a neutral. That's great.
Shall we tell him who our guest is this week?
Why don't you tell them? Because I think you have more of a relationship to him than I do, for reasons TBD.
Our guest is Larry Rickard. He is one of the stars and creators of the sitcom Ghosts, which returns for its final series on BBC One this week. But perhaps more than that, he is known to generations as one of the original six idiots from Horrible Histories. Our son is obsessed with it. And we live in a fragmented age where kids watch what they watch and we watch what we watch. But Ghost feels like something you can sit down with your kid and watch. And that is what I do with our son. You often absent yourself from these TV watching activities because I view the TV as a lovely shared experience. You view it as a way of distracting him so you can have a break.
I'm like trying to let him have a him thing, but you want us things.
Some parents have activities they like doing with a child, like playing football or building a model train set. The thing I like to do with him is watch TV.
Yeah, but you do other things. Also, Ghosts is a very good family show. All right, so I want to do like two quick quicks because the ongoing project is that it has felt imperative that we finish Mr. In-Between.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But we've gone out of sync.
This is what happened. So we had like a night in and we, as this real treat to ourselves, we were like, we're just going to flop on the sofa and watch Mr. In-Between. Jeff has recently run out of his medication. So I became aware that he was falling asleep as we are like watching the last few episodes of Mr. In-Between. And it felt sort of to me like an addiction. Like I was like, I know we should do this together, but I can't stop myself.
The betrayal.
So I got to the end of it and was like, whoa, wait, where are they going to take it from here? And then Disney Plus prompted me to another show. And I was like, holy shit, you just watched the end of Mr. In-Between without realizing it. So I was so confused and sad, but like impressed. And I just feel that it was just an incredible ending. And I think he's like the most amazing and talented person who's ever lived. And I say that to Jesse Armstrong. You don't have anything on Scott Ryan. He's my new big boy. Because Scott Ryan is acting. Jesse Armstrong can't even fucking perform on camera, okay? Scott Ryan is my new number one boy. I don't feel great that these keep being men. Mm. but I'm just speaking the truth of my heart.
But the reason we took that conversational detour is that you needed to find something else to watch pronto, because I wasn't caught up on Mr. In Between.
I watched this show, I watched a show called Daisy Jones and the Six. It is on Amazon Prime. It's sort of loosely based on Fleetwood Mac. So like think 1970s.
Okay.
I go, oh, think California. I go, oh, let's give it a go. What a piece of fucking shit. So first of all, everyone in it looks like a model. Riley Keough, I don't know if it's Riley Keough or Keough or what her name is, but Elvis's granddaughter, Lisa Marie's daughter.
She's a Nepo grandbaby.
Nepo grandbaby. So it's presented like a documentary. So what I mean is that in the same way that a Christopher Guest film gives you like a talking heads moment.
Oh, so it's a rockumentary like Spinal Tap.
Exactly. But it is not funny. Uh-huh. So it's these actors in the roles of these imagined rock stars.
From the 70s.
From the 70s, like talking to you now. And when it first happened, it was so bad. I was like, this isn't happening. It was so bad that I thought it has to be real. So then I was like, is Daisy Jones and the Six a real band? No. The thing is Riley Keough's acting is really bad in it as well.
You're really hedging your bets on that pronunciation,
really,
aren't you?
I'm just going to call her Riley.
Six different ways.
I'm going to just call her Riley. I've seen her be good in other films. So I think it's the fault of the script and the director.
I'll tell you what I don't think I have ever seen done well in film. The creative process.
This is the thing. This lady, Riley, is supposed to be Stevie Nicks, basically like this genius sort of songwriter. So there's just moments where, wait, something's occurring to her and she needs to just grab that notebook and just scribble down some lyrics and sit in a sexy outfit.
I feel like I've got a sliver of license to talk about my favourite subject here. Because one of the greatest captured moments of creativity,
yes,
is that bit in Get Back where you see Paul McCartney find Get Back. And it feels much more akin to digging something covered in shit out of, yes, the ground and scraping it off.
Yes.
And George Harrison looked bored initially during it. And that they managed to capture that on film is an incredible thing. But that doesn't look like any other depiction of creativity we've ever seen.
Yeah. To non-Beatles people, I recommend to you the way that I eventually watched Get Back was watching it like a day at a time.
Because it's a Beatles film over about a month and it's hours and hours long.
Okay. So one more thing I want to say about Daisy Jones and the Six. It makes me very uncomfortable because they're putting all this 70s music in, which is like, you know, amazing. But then it'll be like the song
that's been written specially for the show. Oh, that's great.
And then
great.
You're like, this, yeah, is terrible.
We should get people to email in with the worst fictionalized versions of rock and roll songs.
By the way, is this the moment to say that my senior movement and my youth movement did not go very well? Oh, well.
Well, you try these things.
I know. You have to be brave, Jeff.
Now, in contrast, I have watched something that is genuinely excellent. It's a three-part HBO documentary. It's produced by Danny McBride, who we know from The Righteous Gemstones, but also famously he created Eastbound and Down, and by the Safdie brothers, who made that film Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler.
It's called Telemarketers, and it's a documentary maker called Sam Litman Stern, who, when he was in high school, started working for this telemarketing firm.
In America, we say telemarketers, not telemarketers.
That might just be me getting it wrong.
But I think maybe in this show we say telemarketers. So it's called Telemarketers.
Yes. So this kid gets a job at a call center. And what the call center do is they cold call on behalf of charities, often police charities, to raise money. But they keep 90% of the money. And this call center is one of the most insane workplaces you've ever seen. They would employ people who were unemployable anywhere else because they are addicts or because they've been in prison. So the workplace is just chaos, people taking drugs. In fact, one of them said, if you want to get money out of people, employ a crackhead because they're really good at talking people into giving them money.
What?
Yeah. And this young man started taking a camcorder into work and filming the antics in the office, initially just because it was a wild place to work. But then over time, he and one of his colleagues realise that this business model is rotten, and they realise they've got documentary footage to expose this.
Oh my God.
And it's fantastic. And I don't think I just liked it because I have had experience in telemarketing.
When?
I worked in a double glazing call center briefly.
Oh, I would be very susceptible to that product being sold to me.
So I had to sit with a phone book and just go through the alphabet, ringing people, asking if somebody could come around and talk to them about double glazing. And I can't remember much about it other than that we had a script and there were signs up everywhere saying things like smile while you dial and don't moan when you phone.
Would you just say, hello, we'd like to come and talk to you about this. Would there be a good time? And they would say no.
Hi, is that Ms. Barron?
Yes. Who's calling, please?
Hi, my name's Jeff. I'm calling from whatever it was called. I can't even remember now.
Oh, no, thank you. We're not interested in that. Have a nice rest of your day.
Oh, just before you... No, well, you're very good at closing it down.
Yeah, I am. But
the lonely aunt.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Thinking of you, what you would have done all day is spend the day on the phone. Like, it's just like, that's so shocking.
Oh, yeah. I can't even call a restaurant to make a reservation.
No.
If there's anything that needs to be done on the phone, I ask you to do it.
It's so, you know, sad how we change as we get older, I think.
I used to love being on the phone. I sometimes used to look up teachers in the phone book and then just call them during the school holidays to see how they were getting on.
I wonder how they felt about that. It must have been a mix.
So weird, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird, but I don't want you to feel sad thinking about your school days.
I think you think my life is much more of a tragedy than I think it is.
I think your life is much more of a tragedy than you think it is.
But anyway, this call center, the characters who work there, they've clearly lived difficult lives. And usually if you see those people talking on camera, they're talking about the thing that they did.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they're telling you about their experiences supporting characters in this huge white-collar crime scandal. There's one guy, and he's undoubtedly the star of the show. He's a guy called Pat J. Pespas. He is one of the most compelling people I have ever seen on TV. And I know that everyone's unique. We're all unique, right? But do you not think, really, most of us are just variations on a theme?
Of course.
And I'm not saying that people haven't got idiosyncrasies, but I just think that most of us are some version of something you've seen before.
Like, you fit the mold of this kind of person.
Yeah.
And I think I fit the mold of this kind of person.
Like, you're a strong flavor, but really it's just Carol Burnett for the new millennium.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, dirty Carol
you're
Burnett.
Also a strong flavor. But your point is with this, like, Alfred J. Prufrock or whatever his name is.
Pat J. Pespas.
That's what I said. He's singular.
Honestly, he's like nobody else I've ever seen and so watchable.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know where you put the stress on the word telemarketers.
Is it telly or tella?
Also, if you've got any good documentary recommendations, I really love a doc, but I'm often not in the mood for anything too harrowing. I'll tell you a great one. I mean, it must be 15 years old at this point. That King of Kong.
Oh, I never saw that.
I thought we watched it together.
I know, but I don't remember it at all, which says something.
It's about competitive Donkey Kong players.
Completely uninterested in the world.
I think you pretended to be into it at the time then.
It's very hard to tell with me what can be going on.
Yes.
Like, there's like a bunch of stuff I watched early enough in our relationship that I did a little performance for you.
This is so upsetting to me.
I don't do that anymore.
But maybe that'd be a good thing to get people to email in with. Is there anything that you pretend to like for your partner's benefit? We can offer you a confessional.
Yes. Or does the idea of that feel like as much of a violation in your relationship as like faking an orgasm or something? Like a real lie that you can't do to your partner.
Oh, another thing we said we were going to ask you about is the best and worst fictional songs in TV shows or films about bands. What about best and worst depictions of the creative process?
We'll see what we get on that.
Anything where people stumble across the new sound?
Yeah, stumbling across the new sound.
Yeah. And of course, your recommendations, please. The email address is
fuckoff@firecrotchandnormcore.com. The week before last week, I wanted to be direct with people. It was a light inbox in Patreon week. And I am not in a mental position to be able to handle a light inbox. And so this week, it was a heavy flow. If only you could know the joy that brings me. I know you're thinking, Sarah, pitch the material. Why?
Yeah. A lot of these podcasts out here, when they're talking about
but
the Patreon,
it's bullshit. They're selling the sizzle.
They're not trying to emotionally blackmail people.
I'm not trying to emotionally blackmail people. I think that, like, I like you. You like me. What can I do? What can I do to make you feel a little happy? It has to take me less than 5 minutes.
So is what you're asking, for the people who aren't yet Patreon supporters, you're asking what would get them over the line?
I'm saying that if what I'm sat here doing is going, I get this like little dopamine hit if I check the inbox and it says new Patreon supporter, £3. Oh, and it fills me with the drug. So what can I do to fill you with the drug?
When I couldn't sleep last night, I was rewatching some Broad City, and it was that first episode where they try to get money by going around to a pervert's house and doing his cleaning. In their underwear. You wouldn't go that far, would you?
I'd prefer to do voiceover work or something. I'm very good. I didn't tell you this. I did a voiceover the other day. Jeff, they applauded.
What?
They applauded because they couldn't believe how good I was at it. That's completely true. So are you a Patreon supporter? And like you're, no, sorry, you don't have to be a Patreon supporter. Are you a listener? Do you need a fucking solid voice performer?
Most people don't.
But maybe somebody does. I'm not saying I'm the greatest actor in the world, although I'm starting to suspect I might be better than I thought. I said to Jeff Reason, I was like, I do actually wonder if I'm kind of good because I have so many reserves of emotion. But but that's completely serious. I think I have a lot of shit I could tap into. But do you need me? Would you like me to voice something for you? I will shill.
Okay. Patreon.com/they like to watch.
Give me my hit.
And coming up later, talking about the new series of Ghosts, we have Larry Rickard. Do you know one of the things I'm really enjoying about this podcast is when we do the remote interviews, seeing inside other people's houses?
No, I'm bored of it now. I don't even care.
Because Larry had a lot of props, things from his career. He also had a collection of Star Wars figures. Anyway, we peer inside the home office of Larry Rickard later. All right, together this week, we watched the entire series of Boiling Point.
I didn't understand it was a four-parter until we got to the end of episode 4. Devastated.
And I don't know about you, but if I ever see the name Stephen Graham and he's going to be in something, I just think to myself, I wonder which happy-go-lucky character he's going to be playing there.
This show is very watchable, more on which in a second. But I have had to turn stuff off because Stephen Graham is in it, because it's too traumatizing to me to watch him on camera sometimes.
And that's not to say he's not one of our finest actors.
No, he is.
So Boiling Point, starring Stephen Graham, was a film that came out during the pandemic.
Right, which I had like half of an awareness of.
Me too. And I didn't watch it because I think I was finding the pandemic stressful enough without having what I understood to be a very anxiety-producing film set in the high-octane world of restaurant kitchens. And it's all done in one shot as well, I believe, that film.
These people in their one shots.
And then I saw this week, this TV version of it was dropping on the BBC.
Now, what's interesting to me is, like, what came first? Season one of The Bear, or the people behind this film, the idea that they should turn it into a TV show? Because I don't think that just because there's one TV show about restaurants, there shouldn't be another. I hate when people start thinking that they have original ideas. It really pisses me off.
Yeah, I don't mind people having similar ideas. What I do mind is when people make the assumption, oh, that must have been lifted from that then, when it's just this commonplace idea.
I know, I've heard
most ideas are so commonplace.
I hear stand-ups do it with some regularity, where like they'll write a bit about something that's relatively low-hanging fruit. No judgment, samesies. But then they'll be like, so-and-so, I did see them doing a bit about. And you're like, wait a second, someone else has a bit about not fucking their partner after being together for a long time? You know, just these things that are like good fodder for a stand-up bit. But how original do you think you are?
Yeah. If you invent something like Stranger Things, maybe. Most other stuff, everyone's fishing in the same waters.
Exactly.
Do you think it's possible to talk about the show without also talking about The Bear?
It doesn't feel like it, because it just goes into your head in the same box and you start thinking about the ways in which it's better and the ways in which it's worse. Am I right in thinking that you just liked it more than The Bear, just based on the fact that you didn't particularly rate The Bear? And I could tell watching this that you really rated it.
Yes, but I think that's down to some of my baggage about The Bear.
I think that's right.
I think The Bear is a better show than I give it credit for.
Yes, I think that's right.
And I just focus on some of the bits that I find to be cheesy because it's driving me so insane that people are talking about The Bear as if it's as good as Succession.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of attractiveness of people in The Bear is irritating to me as well. Like that guy's face. I think if that guy's face didn't look like it does, maybe I wouldn't have many of the problems with the bear that I've
That's
had.
That's so interesting because he is so gorgeous, but it is in kind of a weird way.
Yeah, but I just thought I'd stop it with the big doe eyes.
Yeah, you're right. I guess you're right.
No, I'm probably not. I also watched it and I enjoyed it so much, but just thought, why does anybody do this for a living? It's a horrible environment.
I feel like I have gotten to a stage where I am so envious of a regular schedule. Like you clock in and clock out.
Yeah, but they're clocking in and clocking out first thing in the morning, leaving late at night. And in those hours in between, there's a lot of people yelling at them and incredible pressure, which is presumably shaving years off their life.
For the love of food, I guess, right?
But don't you think that's crazy?
Why is it crazier than like any other?
Because of the being yelled at.
Yes, but the being yelled at can come with a regular paycheck. Anyway, it just reminded me of my true calling and the thing that I missed the boat on, which is of course being a maitre d'.
How does your rage and moodiness square with your ability to work in the service industry?
Interesting. Because the way it would manifest as a waiter is I was very in control. So when I would get a difficult customer, my go-to phrase was I would preemptively say, you seem like you need a manager. Let me go get one so they can take over from here.
Oh, so you rob them of the ability to ask for the manager.
And I feel that shows the reason I'd be a brilliant maitre d'.
So I think that kind of answers the question of what you would do at rage towards customers.
Yeah.
As both your husband and your podcasting partner, I think if something externally has affected your mood, it's not the easiest for you to snap out of it. It can sometimes feel like being around you is like when the sky is very stormy, but it hasn't quite broken yet.
So you're saying, as a moody little lady, how would I do if my job was like I have to get up and inspire?
I'm saying, how would you get on if you had to be pleasant to a table of people you were giving menus to and then seating them? Because we've had occasions before now where I've had a friend round, and because you're in a bad mood about something else, you cannot be civil.
This is still just all proving my point. So sure, a few times a year I would do a shitty job, but I just think generally I've got the schmooze.
In your experience, if you're front of house staff and you go into the kitchen, is it as crazed and anxious and shouty as these shows?
I think, as you know, I enjoyed the company of many a New York City cook between the years 2000 and one in 2011. And so I dated those guys. But I think, yes, it can get that crazed.
I'll tell you what I couldn't cope with.
Mm-hmm.
The relentless banter in a kitchen. If Boiling Point is to believe, people are bantering the whole time.
I don't think that's real.
I couldn't be around that for more than 8 minutes.
What neither one of us are, really, is a team player.
Here's a question for you. We see one of the kitchen employees, because of abject poverty, sneaking off to eat some of the food from the kitchen without permission. Now, in your case, it wouldn't be abject poverty, but it's your aforementioned blood sugar issues. Was that something that you would do?
So everyone would know that if I wasn't in my station, I'd be at this part of the kitchen shoving food in my mouth. And everyone knew that happened about every half hour. And I can remember standing there and thinking, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. But I don't understand how I will ever be able to do a job if I'm not allowed to eat every half hour and carry food around with me.
One of the waiters, I think to alleviate his own boredom, does that thing where he doesn't write the orders down. That is as anxiety producing as any of the high level kitchen stuff that we see in this show.
I hate that in a restaurant. I genuinely think what goes on for a waiter is they feel cool doing it. And
But you're just making the customers feel anxious.
You're making the customer feel anxious. And the last time a waiter did that to us, they fucked up the order.
We don't think any less of you because you're unable to do feats of memory.
No. And we don't think more of you because you're trying to perform that you can.
No.
Restaurant managers, tell your servers that they have to write shit down.
Well, I really enjoyed this despite anxiety. The lead actor, Vinette Robinson, is fantastic.
Oh, like,
we've been bandying Stephen Graham's name around and the film focused on him, but his character is on the sidelines.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just laughing because there's like a scene that he has and he's not that central to the story in some ways, but like he comes on screen and like says something to do with addiction and you were like immediately sobbing because that is what he does. That's just what he does. It is singular to him whenever he comes on screen.
And his wife's in it, Hannah Walters, which I feel slightly icky about mentioning that it's his wife, but I I think
it's okay.
But there's something really interesting about seeing a real life couple on screen, not playing a couple.
And not doing a podcast. We're the only ones out there. She is phenomenal.
Just one of the most likable characters without being at all cloying with it.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of phenomenal acting in it, I think.
Yeah. And you don't have to pick a team. It's not like a Beatles, Rolling Stones, Blur, Oasis thing. You can like both Boiling Point and The Bear.
Yes. There are just different ways in which they're both a better show than the other one. So Boiling Point is significantly less cheesy, but there was a slight repetitiveness to it. And I don't think The Bear has that because it is also just a bigger,
more expansive
story. So in that way, and it's a much easier watch. Like, it's just fun to watch The Bear. Boiling Point is wonderful, but also painful.
Which restaurant would you rather eat at?
Ooh. And is one in Dalston and one is in Chicago?
Yes.
Chicago, I guess.
A return flight to Chicago really adds to the bill, though.
I didn't think we were thinking about it in that way.
Did you watch Boiling Point? Let us know what you think.
I would love other people's compare and contrast to Boiling Point and The Bear.
Also, are there any shows that just make you too anxious to watch them? You know, some people won't watch awkward comedy like Curb Your Enthusiasm or Peep Show because mm-hmm. it makes them feel too uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think the anxiety of being in this kitchen nudges up against what I can handle.
So the anxiety of this one was much worse for you than The Bear. It sort of makes sense because I think The Bear feels more like you're watching a TV show, which I say is a compliment and a criticism.
But let us know if you've got any things like that.
Fuck off at firecrotchandnormcore.com.
And coming up next, we talk to Larry Rickard about the new series of Ghosts, which is back on BBC One this Friday.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Until Ghosts, I'm guessing it's like been a very weird type of success for you, where you were incredibly famous to kids between certain ages and their parents, and then virtually unknown to everybody else.
Yeah, it was always really interesting when you sort of met families. The children would go, oh my God, and like one of the parents, and then the other one or the grandparent or whoever it might be there with was just like, who is this guy? And why are they so excited? Like it was either 100% or 0%
yes.
recognition. So yeah, it was like we kind of recruited people into a cult. and the other family members are going, what happened?
So often people who make stuff for kids can sometimes have like a weirdness to them. Mm. Like you can be like,
yeah.
Oh, why are you so drawn to entertaining children? Which I guess that's...
So how's your weirdness detector going with Larry?
I wouldn't mention it's non-existent. And that's true for all your colleagues as well. And
even
I've
Simon
never...
Farnaby.
Yes. Simon Farnaby on his own could have the weirdness. But in the context of his friends, I think he seems like a normal. And I'm like, now I think I understand the key to your success only is that you guys entertain children without seeming like the kind of guys who want to entertain children.
Yeah, when we started on Horrible Histories, the sort of directive, because I was on that show initially as a writer, and, you know, the directive was always, we're just making a sketch show. We're not making a show for kids. But also, because the scripts that were then going out to people when we started casting were just sketch show scripts and not sort of children's scripts, we were able to get a cast together of people who didn't work in that world. And so it was comedy people coming together to do a sketch show that happened to be on CBBC.
What I couldn't believe is that it's cast. That it's like the way that a boy band is put together. I just assumed, they've been to Edinburgh, they've found this troupe and they put it on TV, but it was built.
Yeah. I mean, I think in part that's probably the secret of it, because it had to deal with so much history. It was like we're picking types and you need a short one, you need a really handsome one, you need a weird one. But the weird thing was, almost immediately we got along and started having a real laugh. And normally the pattern with TV shows, anything where there's an ensemble, is either everyone gets along and the show's awful, or it's a great show and then you find out that no one liked each other.
Yes. And was that original chemistry, was that like coupling off, or was it like a big swingers party? Because it seems sort of externally like you and Ben are a pair and that Jim and Matt are a pair. Is that how it was?
We always sort of felt like a gang. But as we then started writing together, we started to sort of pair off a little more. Although it's always been quite fluid. You know, I've sort of written, I think with the exception of Matt, I've co-written with all of them at some point, and sometimes you write on your own.
What's your problem with Matt?
Yeah. How do you all handle the objectification of Matt Baton? What does to you?
I think this is the biggest problem that we face as a gang.
Because
for the record, I have no issue with Matt. He's just, you know, really just a difficult person. I think everyone finds the same frustration there.
Larry, you, if I'm not mistaken, you're into, am I right in thinking you collect Star Wars figurines? Is that right?
I
do. They say figures, not figurines.
Well, I'm not the fucking nerd
porcelain
here.
Porcelain ornaments.
I'm not the nerd, so I don't know the lingo. You're Star Wars figures, said with respect.
Yeah.
Larry, do they come out and do you play with them, or are they just there for you to observe visually?
I mean, they're sort of. I'll see if I can. They're. I don't know if you're seeing them up there.
Oh, yeah.
The shelf along with my puppet from Yonderland.
Sure.
Yes, yeah.
Sure.
And down there in a box is my head. There's my head in there, Humphrey's head.
Oh, wow.
This is so exciting.
Yeah, it's really cool.
That is
I'll
good.
Get him out in a bit. I'm an airing. I haven't got any of the very first few that were released, I haven't got. And then the final 17 figures that they made, sort of when interest in the figures was starting to wane, they didn't make very many and they didn't sort of sell as well. And they were the sort of thing, actually, that ended up in a bargain bin of Boots in like Woolworths, rather, for like a quid.
Yes.
What I want is to go back like 30 years with like £20 note and just go into Woolies and make an absolute killing.
A lot of people speculate about what they'd do if they could travel through time, but...
sorted it. That's,
there's no killing Hitler.
No. I mean, I would imagine as soon as time travel comes to pass, that will be taken care of. I think a lot of people have got that on their list. And I'm like, okay, you guys go and deal with him. I'm going to hit Woolies.
This is my final question on this topic, and then you can move on. Yeah. Do you, Larry, the home that we are speaking to you from right now, is there anyone that you share that home with, or do you live in this home on your own?
Yes, I share the same with my partner of 21 years, a poor woman, and my five-year-old son and two very adorable cats.
And what is the five-year-old's relationship with those Star Wars
figures? Wait, like? No, because we have to move off. We do have to move off this as a topic. And I think it is more interesting what the partner's relationship is to the to the toys.
She quite rightly has an interest in anything that has Harrison Ford in his 30s.
Oh, my God.
But otherwise is agnostic about Star Wars. My son he's a huge Star Wars fan, which is really handy.
Jeff always does this as well. These guys, you, do these things where you're like, oh, our 7-year-old just so happens to be interested in the Beatles and Doctor Who. Oh, your 5-year-old just so happens. Isn't it handy?
Look,
and you people are like foisting this stuff on these boys and acting like it's
no
a coincidence.
Control. I just left him in a locked room for barely 3 days. with these Star Wars figures and vinyl Sgt. Peppers, and he came out and he loved this stuff. And I've got no control over that.
Fine.
Watch the deftness with which I bring this back to ghosts. Were the Force ghosts and the rules that govern their appearance in Star Wars, did they play any part in the creation and the rules you followed in the writer's room of ghosts?
I'd never thought of that. Maybe it did in some subconscious level, although we would never go back and replace one of the ghosts with another actor.
Because what is the rule with the ghosts? It seems to be in the TV show, it's the point at which you die is...
Yes.
That's how you become fixed as a ghost.
Yes. It was one of the few rules that we are very clear on. We really liked early on the idea that, you know, Alison would immediately want to go, so what are the rules with this? And the ghosts are still a bit... I don't know, because if the ghosts were a thing that existed, you wouldn't like go across and be handed a book going, so this is how it works.
Yeah.
You would just exist and bit by bit sort of pick up, oh, I think it must be that.
Larry, do you believe in ghosts in real life?
I don't think so. I've always been fascinated by them. And, you know, those Osborne Book of Ghosts and Mysteries and things like that. I took that book out of the library so many times that eventually they just gave it to me.
Wow.
Yeah, they're just like, oh my God, you can't keep doing that. Have it. Have it. But there were a couple of things. I did a on Danny Robbins' podcast, Uncanny About the Paranormal. I talked about a couple of slightly weird things that happened.
Will you please tell give a headline? Because I want to believe. And so if you could just tell me like one slightly weird thing that happened to you, I'd really appreciate it.
There was a weird thing in a hotel toilet and I got like pulled off my feet by something. So just a weird thing.
Hang on. What did that sensation feel like?
Were you sitting? Were you doing a number two on the potty?
No.
And you got pulled up?
No.
What happened?
I was stood at the urinal. Uh-huh. Thankfully, the business in hand had been dealt with.
Uh-huh.
But, and it was like I was wearing a rucksack and it was like, you know, the little handle on the top of a rucksack. It was like someone taller than me had grabbed hold of it and just pulled me backwards.
Wow. This isn't a humble brag about the power of your prostate. It's not
no,
like
no.
The force of the jet of your
Well,
urine.
It was back in the day. So, it was just a bit weird. And then I sort of went and spoke to the person at reception and said, is there anything strange about those toilets? Which is a weird question. And she went, no. And I then left. And it was only when I was thinking back to it, I was like, that's not the answer you would give to that question. You go, weird hat, what? Anyway, I don't know. But I mean, the one thing that doing ghosts has done, trying to break down the plot logic of how ghosts work, make you really not believe in ghosts. We based a lot of the things that happened in the show on sort of genuine reports of ghosts. And it's always like, oh, they walk through the wall. And then equally, you get a lot of stories of I woke up and sat on the end of the bed and you go, right, so is it sitting on physical things or is it passing through?
When you were developing the show, how solid was that mix of ghosts, caveman, scoutmaster, romantic poet and so on? Or were there some that were there right until the end of the development stage and then got bumped?
Well, we were quite lucky and we sort of had to not force the issue. We shot a kind of half-length pilot in which there were 100 ghosts and we played all of them. And we realised it was just completely impossible to shoot this. And we just realised it meant that you just never got to care about anyone because each episode would be like a new pilot for a different show. And so we then refined it down to the characters we ended up with. So like my plan was when we first started talking about having a caveman character, because I'd always done the bigger makeup parts when we'd done Horrible Histories and Yonderland, everyone sort of slowly turned to look at me and I was like, right, I'll do it, but I'm not doing it every day. I'll play the headless character and then every now and then we'll do a little gag with the caveman. And as we made the pilot, we realised that Caveman was the funniest bit and that the best jokes we got out of the headless guy was when his head wasn't on his body.
Right.
So I ended up sort of playing to a special effect and a visual effect. And yeah, that wasn't quite what I signed up for.
But. So does that mean you have to get to work earlier than anyone else?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't use the term bone of contention. But, no, luckily, I've always been really interested in the behind-the-scenes stuff and effects and prosthetics and makeup. And I think, you know, if I hadn't gone into this side of the industry, I probably would have gone into that.
Is that how you find the caveman character? Is it outside in? Or did you have some kind of, was he sort of just living there within you, waiting to be let out?
I think it was a little bit of both. But once you've got all of that sort of costume and makeup on, you do definitely feel a bit different and you hold yourself a bit differently. And each series, there's always sort of one new crew member who gets to like week three and goes, he also plays the headless guy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they only ever see you on set.
Do you need to take a run-up at the voice or is it just there ready to go at any given moment?
Oh, no.
Oh, my God, that is so
like getting an impression this time, isn't it?
That was so, but it was so satisfying.
Normally, you can tell when we sort of look at rough cuts and things, if you can see the couple of seconds before they shout action, I'm normally going, okay. Is that's like the little tick.
It's how you anchor yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Oh.
Yeah. Do you ever wonder, I guess it applies to all six of you, that at some point you're going to run out of accents?
I mean, that was sort of a problem that became a real boon on Horrible Histories. Because I think it meant that we did stuff that was a bit stranger than we otherwise would have. Like often the caveman wouldn't sound like caveman. You'd done all that Route 1 stuff, and so they'd end up being like very, very posh middle management and things like that. And I think that became part of the voice of the show, was out of a sort of desperation to find another voice and another character that you hadn't done.
With this being the final series of Ghosts, is it more in the realm of a victory lap or more like real pressure to land it well?
I think it's a number of things. You want it to feel like it's going out on a high. And you want people to feel satisfied with how you've done it. You want to be surprising them. You hope that the quality remains, ideally, that you sort of step up each series. That's what you're always trying to do. But we've just done a book as well. So that's been like a really healthy methadone to take us slowly down out of that world and sort of exercise those final ideas that we always wanted to do, but we never found a place for in story.
Which shows, I guess specifically in comedy, but we can go broader, do you think have done a really good job of a final episode?
I mean, the high watermark is probably still the very end of Blackadder, because it did something interesting tonally, because there are those shows, and I think hopefully Ghosts is amongst them, where we sort of have those moments where we put a handbrake on the comedy for a bit and just sort of explore some more drama. But I think because Blackadder didn't do that, it landed so hard when it then did.
Yeah.
Very suddenly at the end there.
How sure are you or aren't you of what you're going to be working on next?
Well, there's a couple of things that I'm already writing. So hopefully we're quite sure about those, because otherwise it's a real waste of time. But yeah, you know, we are very much of a mind to do something else as a gang together. You know, we're not bored of each other yet.
Just to finish a few quick telly questions. What is the show you've watched more than any other?
Oh my God. I think probably pure repeat viewings, it would have to be Fawlty Towers. My dad recorded them all onto VHS, and it's the only thing I can legitimately say I watched it until the tape split.
Wow. And it's interesting because even though some of the subject matter of the jokes hasn't dated well, the rhythm of it as a show, you know, often you'll watch stuff from a certain era and you have to think, okay, well, I have to accept this is going to be slow in a certain way. I just think that the rhythm of Fawlty Towers as a show holds up decades later.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is that. The Mrs. Richards episode is just up there in terms of the rhythm, it's like a real proper masterclass. Although, because at the time on a VHS, you know, you had to sort of just set your video for a particular time slot. And so if something had gone on a minute too long at the beginning, the whole half hour was shifted.
Yes.
And so for about 7 years, at the point where the vase is handed over and he goes, and this is your vase, Mrs. Rick, the VHS ended. And so until I bought the script book when I was about 13, I had no idea what the last minute of that episode was. It's, that's kind of really tantalizing.
What do you think we should be watching at the moment?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm quite enjoying, I've only just started, I'm only about halfway through the first series of Yellowstone. I always enjoy Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I think it's just
interesting. Yeah, we have a few people have written to us to say, like, that's, I've never seen a minute of that show.
I think I watched an episode a few years ago and never went back to it.
I watched the first episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think, three times, watching it, forgetting about it for 6 months, then someone else I know saying, God, it's a really good show, going back and trying again. It was on the third time that I sort of kept on and did another one, the third and the fourth and the fifth, and then I was like, oh, okay, this is great.
Interestingly, I think, you know, the way you're talking about Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and then there have been a few things I've watched, and like the pilot, especially with comedy, the pilot is so good, and I think, oh, this is the next thing. And then it kind of like, they give it all in that thing to get it sold, and then nothing else is as good.
It's very rare that you watch something and you go, this is great from the get-go, and it no way drops off. I remember watching the pilot of Derry Girls and it being one of those things where it got to the end and I stood up and just went, yes! Because, like, just making things like that is sort of my job, and you go, someone has just done that so well.
Yeah.
And then watched two and three of that first series, and I was like, oh, damn them, it's as good. How dare they? How dare she not tail off?
Larry Rickard.
What a little dreamboat, huh?
I liked him a lot.
Oh, yeah, that's a given.
And it's my instinct that all of them are that great.
Yes, that is the way that they are spoken about in the biz.
And where are you in the biz? Are you down the Groucho Club? Where are you?
Where am I in the biz?
Where are you hearing these things?
I hear things. I don't go to the Groucho Club, but I hear things about the biz. I'm not saying I'm also in the biz, but I hear people talk.
You're eavesdropping?
I'd love to eavesdrop, but I'm not eavesdropping. No, I'm never like overhearing something, but you just, I don't know, people just talk.
So when you're with the show business Illuminati,
yeah,
and you're decreeing who in the biz.
Oh, I tried to spread a rumor the other day. I didn't tell you this.
You didn't.
But anyway, Larry Rickard is like, you know, you just smell pure, pure little dreaminess on him, don't you?
You do.
A true darling. Oh, there's a stone path laid out in front of us. Here we go. Oh, it's the inbox in the middle of the woods. So many jewels to behold. Beautiful email everywhere. Let's scrub this one off and see what it says.
How magical.
All right. This first email comes from Rebecca Liu. Rebecca writes, this is specifically for you, Sarah. Thank you, Rebecca, the star of the pod. Could we hear your recital of Steve Martin's song from the third season of Only Murders in the Building? You should be aware that it is called Which of the Pickwick Triplets Did It? Oh, and if you can do the entire song, my daughters and I would be even more impressed. Also, why aren't you guys talking about how great the third season is? Thank you, Rebecca. Where even to begin with Rebecca's email? I mean, should we just address the direct question first?
Yeah, so I really like the first couple of episodes. Haven't had time to go back to it yet, but part of that might be because a few people have said to me it went downhill.
Yeah, so Rebecca, you, based on the tiniest amount of anecdotal evidence, you seem to be in the minority in thinking that it's a great season of Only Murders in the Building. So that combined with the fact that we get overfaced these days with TV, it's like, you gotta be the best of the best of the best, according to us, to recapture our attention.
But I genuinely enjoyed that opening pair of episodes with Paul Rudd and Meryl Streep, who people all know from the end of Mamma Mia 2, that sequence. And I am intrigued by a musical number.
So I Googled it. We're not allowed to play any of it, right? Because of like rights stuff.
Yes.
So I've never heard of it, Rebecca, until you mentioned it to me. So of course I don't know it. But what she has really correctly sussed out. Is it, it's the role I was born to play. Now the question becomes, Rebecca, is it worth my time to like impress you? It might be.
But that'd be a good addendum to the thing I asked you to email in with before. Fictional rock bands, best and worst songs. Fictional musicals, best and worst songs.
God, I can't even think of a fictional musical.
Oh, come on. Waiting for Guffman.
Nothing, oh, my gosh.
Nothing ever happens
on Mars. Stupid.
And what about Curb Your Enthusiasm, Fatwa the musical?
Oh, my. That's the thing that Jeff and I, when we feel low or need a little something, we watch The Enemies Forever, performed by F. Murray Abraham and Lin-Manuel. It's just one of the greatest things on television that has ever happened.
It gives so much. The choreography is hilarious. But also what Larry David and Jeff Garlin are giving.
It is so good. So anyway, never heard of it. But Rebecca, I felt like however it is that I have struck you is correct. You know me, Rebecca.
You feel seen.
I feel seen and she gets me. And yes, that's my kind of thing.
This comes from Claire Z.
Oh, I think she might be a Claire Z, but I don't know for sure.
Dear FC and NC, just wanted to say, after hearing how bad the writer stroke editorial decisions were for the COVID storylines on The Morning Show and This Is Us, can we please give out all the accolades to Motherland, who paralleled COVID with a NITS outbreak? Genius. Now, you watch this.
Yes. Yeah, so when Motherland came out, we watched a couple of episodes and I wasn't particularly taken in.
I'll tell you what it was. I think we both thought there were some really funny comic performances in it.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think either of us had much time for the idea of motherhood being the sit for a sitcom.
Yes, that's exactly it. I would love a show about motherhood, but it has to be a sort of little side dish. So I just went, not for me. Subsequently, so many people have talked about how it's incredible. I thought, I bet I've gotten that wrong, but I've just never gone back and looked at it. So Claire sent the link to watch this scene, and it was hilarious. And it featured Margaret Caborn Smith, who is an actor and a writer, and I know her a little bit. And she was stunningly hilarious in this, playing like the school principal. I thought I understand. I was wrong. It was one of the funniest things I've ever fucking seen. And then the idea that that was how they addressed COVID, I thought seemed so smart.
If you want to watch it, you can search for School Knit Outbreak Pandemic Motherland. I de-loused this week.
I de-loused today. We are crawling in bugs.
Did you feel flattered that knits would like your hair?
No. I can feel that way very occasionally about a mosquito. I'm like, I'm uncomfortable, but I get that I'm delicious. All right. This next email comes from Nicola Lee. Nicola writes, I broke my toe watching Gandhi on TV. Good opener, Nicola. I was an impressionable teenager into my causes, CND, animal welfare, Amnesty International, etc. It got to the stage in the film when the troops just fired. It's so funny to me for some reason. It got to the stage in the film when the troops just fire into the crowd. I know that's horrible, but she then goes on to say, and I was so horrified and upset that I ran out of the room. Unfortunately, I missed the open door and ran into the door frame and broke my toe. That is so funny. You've got this incredible do-gooder of a teenager, and she's so like easily set off that she can't watch the scene, and then she tries to flee the room and she breaks a toe. Oh my God.
I sometimes think you were born in the wrong era. Because I think really your ideal form of entertainment would have been silent movies. Where there's a lot of falling over, things falling. Dropping onto people's heads.
I love falling so much.
I know. Like, no.
I think it's so great. I'm just thinking
it's
about
such people. A tragedy you were born after the talkies. Became the preeminent form of screen entertainment.
The thing is, the reason you might have that wrong is that I don't like an inauthentic fall. But like when someone does it, you know, the greatest thing I ever have, a friend of mine once fell down the stairs.
Did what?
She fell downstairs in front of me and it's still, obviously she didn't get hurt, you know. I don't think I've ever seen anything that funny since. Once in a while, when we've been on a holiday, you were floating in the ocean one time. Jeff was floating in the ocean. Like this. isn't that funny. So just to prep you, it's not that funny, but he was floating in the ocean and I was like a little ways away. And this woman sort of floated into his personal space in the wide expanse of the ocean. She like floated into him. And the sort of the way that you responded to a stranger being that close to you and your torso was exposed.
Do you remember one time on holiday, I walked out onto a balcony, not realizing the patio door, the glass door was closed. Sarah, you sound like such a simpleton. They've never heard you laugh like this at anything.
It's
broad physical humour.
You have walked into a pane of glass. And my brother was there. And he laughed so hard. He couldn't stand up straight. There was a couch, and he's a big boy, but he just like started to crouch down, and he bit, like the way, you know how if you're like trying to sneak out of a kid's room and not make any noise, he sort of did that physical motion in reverse so he could like laugh at you without you knowing you were being laughed at.
You've gone very pink.
Oh, what a trio. A triptych, if you will. Interestingly, sometimes when I copy these down and I can tell whether they'll do something to me, and Nicola, I did not see this coming.
All right, also this week, Aoife thinks we should watch Flora and Son. That's the one with Eve Hewson from Bad Sisters in it.
Yes.
Anne Holloway thinks we should watch Starstruck. Isabel, inspired by Marnie Dickens' mention of the same, thinks we should watch Buffy. Never seen an episode.
Neither have I. And it was almost like Marnie Dickens sharing her truth made Isabel comfortable sharing her truth. That was a little bit of the vibe of the email I got from Isabel.
Jill Cochran thinks we should watch Cuckoo, starring Greg Davis.
This was after you mentioning him last week. And she's like, if you're a fan, this is the thing.
He's a very funny man. Andrea Martin thinks we should watch Great News. And a special shout out to Fred King, who, number one, misses Mr. Inbox.
Hello, Freddy.
And number two, resubscribed to Apple TV specifically so he could hate watch The Morning Show.
Fred, I don't know your story. I don't know what you look like. I don't know how old you are. I don't know your sexual orientation. But like, I would maybe leave Jeff for you. Like, I sometimes try and conceive of love, like loving someone else, or like who else would know me really? Like, and I think a guy who's like, bring back the inbox voice. And also is like, oh, I'm going to like spend money to get angry at that TV show could actually be my soulmate.
It also suggests a certain level of financial solvency.
Wait, what if I did Indecent Proposal with Fred King? Fred, how much would you pay? Are you up for this? I need to see photos. Maybe I don't.
This week, Sarah watched, but I fell asleep and I'm desperate to finish it, Mr. Inbetween on Disney Plus, and Daisy Jones and the Six on Amazon Prime Video. I watched Telemarketers, which is an HBO documentary. You can see it on Sky and Now TV here in the UK. And we watch Boiling Point on BBC iPlayer. Larry Rickard likes to watch Blackadder, which you can find on BritBox. Fawlty Towers, which isn't available to stream or buy on any digital platform at the moment.
Oh.
Yellowstone on Paramount Plus, Brooklyn Nine-Nine on Netflix, and Derry Girls on Channel 4. Well, it's that time of year when you do something deeply strange and try and pass it off as normal.
I think it is normal. I'm going for my gourd display. It's October 2nd. I can do it. I haven't gone full gourd yet because the local greengrocers, they usually sell these little things where you can get a nice assortment together.
And these are like knobbly squashes?
People, if you don't know what a gourd is, I am not going to explain it to you. This is one of the ways that Britain is behind. It just is. And there are ways in which America is behind, but I'm just saying, get on board with the gourd. It is so seasonal. It is so fun. Okay? Get on board with the gourds. Listen to me. Get on board. Buy some gourds. You will feel joy every time you look at them. Orange, gold, red, dark green. Those are autumn colors. And so you put those together in the right bowl. I did a corporate event that I hosted like about around a year ago, and Le Creuset was one of the sponsors, and I kind of came at them and I was like, I want some free Le Creuset shit, because they have this like one casserole dish. It's like 300 and some pounds, but it's the shape and the color of a pumpkin. I was like, I want that in my fucking life. They then agreed to send me one. I felt so powerful. It was like the fanciest I've ever felt. But I'm going to make a nice meal in it soon. Anyway, here we are. We enter autumn. Get on board. Get some gourds. Shoo, fly, shoo.
Bye-bye.